Well, again, good morning, everybody. We're going to try one more time, get everybody engaged. Good morning. Excellent. So my name is Mike. I am one of the pastors on staff here, and just glad to be here with you as we are in the second week of our series, The Fundamentals. If you weren't here last weekend, this series is all about how to win in our relationships. And we're doing a series like this at church because, in my experience, most people are interested in that. In fact, we'll demonstrate that right here, right now, with a highly scientific experiment. All right, we're going to take a quick survey. All right, how many of you, you know, if somebody said to you, you know what, I'd be okay if my relationships got better than they are right now? Show of hands. How many of you would be up for that? Okay, all right. How many of you are like, whoa, no. My relationships need to be downgraded, all right? Just wait, I can't take how good it is. I'd like for my relationships to get a little bit worse. Anybody in the back there? Okay. So sometimes, right? Yeah. There's a couple of those people you'd like, you know, to just out of the life, right? So, yeah. Would you like to name any names? No. Okay. So, here's the good news. Really not that complicated. Like if you're thinking, I'd like this relationship to get worse, most of the time, just do what you're doing. You'll get there, okay? And if you want the relationships to get better, again, it's not that complicated. We're building this whole series on this premise that that when it comes to our relationships, the struggles that we have aren't based off of these deep-seated, highly complex, intricate issues. More often than not, they come our way when one or both people in that relationship are failing to live well into some basic fundamental relational principles. And so in this series, we're just kind of going back to the basics. We're getting simple. We're looking at these concepts that they're really simple ideas, but they have the ability to have a profound impact on our relationships. So, as we think about this week's fundamental relational principle, I'm reminded of a couple that did not live into this principle well, all right? The couple that I have in mind, they are not married, which is okay, because what we've been saying, you know, as we started last week, that the principles that we're talking about, more often than not, we're discussing them in the context of marriage, but they apply to whatever relationships we have. So what we're going to talk about applies to our relationship with our spouse, our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors, our parents, our siblings, whoever. So this couple not being married isn't an issue. The couple that I am thinking of is Winston Churchill and Lady Nancy Astor. Now, if you're not familiar with these two young people, you can follow them on Twitter and on Snapchat, all right? It's at Winston Churchill at twitter.com. Lady Nancy's more of a snapper than she is a Twitter person, but... no, actually, these two are political figures from the 1940s, and they did not like one another. Churchill used to refer to Astor regularly as an old battle axe of a woman, right? Just free priest of relational advice, gentlemen. Not a good pet name for your wife or girlfriend, all right? Just leave that one alone, all right? But one time in public, Astor said to him, she said, "Sir, if you were my husband, I would put poison in your tea." To which Churchill responded, "Madam, if you were my wife, I would drink it." Right? Ain't get long, all right? They did not like each other. Now the fundamental that these two illustrate for us is the fundamental of fighting fair. You see, in relationships, fighting fair is huge. And while it's fun to, you know, to look at another couple, you know, maybe it's funny the way that they did not fight fair. If you've ever been in a relationship with another person and they're not fighting fair, you know it is anything but funny. Like, relationships where people don't fight fair, more often than not, they're just painful. Fighting dirty, it'll drive a wedge between two people like few things can. It'll leave people with wounds, with scars. I've seen more than one marriage end in divorce because one or both people in that relationship would not learn how to fight fair. In fact, as I was getting ready for this message, came across some research where researchers studied a large group of couples over a long period of time, and they were able to predict with an 80% degree of accuracy or better whether or not a couple would make it or not in their marriage. And they did so based solely on how those couples dealt with conflict. It's huge. It's again, simple thing has a profound impact on our relationships for good or for bad. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to look at some of what the Bible has to say about how to fight fair. In an effort to do that, we're going to turn to the New Testament book of James. Look at a short little passage where James gives us some tools for fighting fair. And then from time to time, we're going to supplement those concepts with some ideas from the book of Proverbs, trying to expand on them a little bit. So hopefully when we get done, when we walk out those doors, we'll have some really practical but helpful tools for managing conflict in our relationships. So let's just take a minute. We're going to pray, invite God to be part of this, and then we'll dive into James. Father, today, just as we talk about this, just ask that you would meet us, please. Help us just be honest with ourselves, just to see where we need to grow in this and what that could look like. Father, just thank you so much. As I just think about some of the things we prayed about last week, thank you so much. Brian Bates is home, that he is doing well. God, thank you for a turnaround where we were afraid, reasonably afraid, we were going to lose him. And it looks like he's going to recover just fine. Father, just today, just thank my friend Don Earl Johnson as the pastor at Life Church Auburn Hills, and they're having their very first preview service today. They're just beginning to launch as a brand new church plant. God, I just pray you would give Don Earl and his team wisdom, that you would fill them with your grace, that you would bless this service that they're having, that you'd help them right now as they're setting up. And as it goes in church planting, something is going wrong with the technology. Help them, please. Just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So as James begins, and he talks about conflict, James says to us this. He says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this, everyone," and we'll just stop right there, that word everyone, in the original language, you know what that word means? Everyone. Yeah, it's not that complicated, all right? Nothing tricky. It means what James is about to say, it is applicable to everybody sitting in this room. He says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Short little verse. Simple concepts, really practical tools for doing conflict well. James, as he begins, he says, everyone should be quick to listen. Now, James tells us in the midst of conflict, we should be quick to listen because in our brokenness, we are inclined to do just the opposite. In the midst of conflict, it's so easy for us to go into this thing assuming we've got all the answers. Like something goes down between us and somebody else, and we think we know what happened and why it happened and how it happened and what it all means. We think we've got all the answers before we've taken the time to listen. Now, here's the problem with that. We're not God. In fact, look at the person next to you right now and with an attitude, tell them, you ain't God. That was good. Oh, yeah. Very good, Sam. Here's the deal. As easy as it is in the midst of conflict to assume we've got it all figured out, we are not all-knowing, all-seeing, ever-present beings. And at times, we roll in thinking we've got all the answers about what happened and why and what it all means. And the problem is, sometimes we're just wrong. We're just wrong. And so James is like, hey, you need to slow down and you need to be quick to listen. In fact, Proverbs warns us about this. Proverbs says this. It says, to answer before listening, that is folly and shame. In the midst of conflict, when I get to this point where I think I've got all the answers before I've taken the time to listen, it brings folly and shame to bear on my relationship. brings folly to bear. In other words, it will escalate. It only serves to just make things worse in the midst of that conflict. And it brings shame to bear. In other words, especially when I'm wrong about those answers, I just look silly. Now, here's the deal. We know this to be true because just about every one of us here in this room has experienced this. For example, married people. Ever had a time where something went down between you and your spouse and your spouse was convinced they knew what happened, they knew what you did, they knew how you did it, they knew why you did it, they knew what it all meant. Only problem was your spouse was wrong. Ever had that happen? Yeah, and no elbows, all right? Just eyes forward, don't give them the look, all right? That's not going to help anything, all right? All right? But they knew, they had it all, they had all the answers, right? And even though they were wrong, it didn't keep them from reacting emotionally. And even though they were wrong, it didn't keep them from responding back towards you. And even though they were wrong, it didn't keep them from escalating the situation and looking silly. And if you've ever been there, you know, the thing that really drives you crazy is that if they'd have just taken a minute, if they'd have just listened to you, we could have gone without all that drama, right? Now, I ask, has your spouse ever done that to you? Because it's always easy to remember when somebody's done that to you as opposed to when you've done that to somebody else, right? But if we're honest, we know this goes both ways. And we know it's just as relationally destructive either way. And so James is telling us here that we need to be quick to listen. That in the midst of conflict, before we let ourselves just go on this emotional train, before we get upset, before we let frustration take root, that we need to realize we don't have all the answers. And we need to sit down with this other person and listen to what they have to say. Now, that being said, again, we want this to be just super practical today. Let me give you some pointers for listening. First one would simply be this. If we're going to listen well, it means that we're going to leave the answers behind. That when I have conflict with another person, that I'm going to sit down and listen with them, and as I do, I'm leaving the answers behind. I'm going into this conversation not assuming that I've got it all figured out. Regardless of how much evidence I might think I have for the answers that I've come up with in my head. I'm going to enter into this conversation operating under the assumption that I'm not God. Operating under the assumption that there could be information at hand that I'm not aware of. I'm going to enter into this conversation operating under the assumption that I could actually be wrong. I'm going to leave the answers behind. Second pointer I'd give is that I should use a communication tool called active listening. And really, anytime we talk about communication together, I will bring active listening up because I need to be reminded of it at least that often. And the idea with active listening is really pretty simple. The idea is, you know, if I have an issue with Jody, you know, we get into it about something, all right? When I'm going to sit down and try and figure this out with Jody, I'm going to sit down with Jody and I'm going to say, okay, Jody, can you explain to me what happened? And then as Jody speaks, without interrupting her, without forming my rebuttal in my mind as she's talking, right, without trying to figure out where she's wrong, I'm going to try and listen to what she has to say. And then when she gets done telling me about what she did and how she did it, why she did it, and what it all means, I'm going to parrot back to her what it is I thought I heard her say. So it'd be as simple as, okay, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying this, that, and the other thing. Is that correct? And if Jody tells me yes, then great, listening is taking place. If she tells me no, that's not it, then we're going to repeat that process until I can get it right. Because you see, here's the deal. If we're in conflict with another person, if we're going to move forward, if we've got any kind of chance at resolution, I've got to understand this other person. Doesn't mean I have to agree. Doesn't mean I need to think they're right. but I need to understand where they're coming from, what they're thinking. I need to understand their perspective. And that simply doesn't happen unless I can listen. So as James begins, he says, be quick to listen. And then he says, be slow to speak. Now he tells us to be slow to speak for a number of reasons. One of them is that when we're quick to speak, we tend not to think about what we're going to say anywhere near as much as we should if we're going to fight fair. Again, Proverbs captures this idea. It says it this way. It says, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. Another way to say that is wise people weigh it before they say it. Wise people weigh it before they say it. Before they speak something, they're going to think about what they're going to say. They're going to take time to consider what it is they're about to put, you know, into words. They're going to ponder on what they verbalize before they say it. Wise people weigh it before they say it. In fact, in the midst of conflict, wise people will always ask and answer three questions before they speak. Three simple questions. First one is this. Should I say it at all? See, just because I'm thinking it doesn't mean I should speak it. Just because I can have a thought rattling around between my ears doesn't mean it should get a fast pass to my lips. Especially in the midst of conflict, there are some things that I can think that I should never verbalize because it's only going to be harmful and destructive, and it's just going to tear things down rather than build them up. So the first thing I should be asking myself is, should I say it at all? The next thing I should be asking is, when should I say it? Because just because I should say it doesn't mean that here and now is the best time and place to say it. There are some times and some places that are better than others. Like if I've got something difficult I need to say to my wife, it should never be in public in front of other people. If I'm smart, it won't be at a high stress time. There's a better time and place. I should be asking myself, when should I say it? And then I should be asking myself, how should I say it? Because just because it's true and it needs to be said, and just because here and now is a good time and place to say it, doesn't mean I need to be a jackwagon about how I say it, okay? Like, somebody once said that I can speak the truth and do so in love. Somebody else said that my words should always be seasoned with salt, that I should look to make them palatable. It can be true. It could need to be said. This can be the right place and time. It doesn't need to be double barrel shotgun style every time. There can be grace and love in the way that we communicate. Wise people, they ask, should I say it at all? When should I say it? How should I say it? They weigh it before they say it. Which leads us to the other reason why we should be slow to speak. And again, Proverbs captures this one. It's this idea that our words are powerful. Proverbs says it this way. It says, the words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. See, when we're quick to speak, when we're reckless with our words, when we don't take the time to think about what we're going to say as much as we should, we can say things that just, they're destructive. It's so easy to be like, it's just words. No, it is so much more than that. What we say to another person, it can devastate another person emotionally. It can destroy a relationship. It's so easy to do. I can remember talking to another couple, and early on in their marriage, when they were younger, they used to argue a lot about physical intimacy in their relationship. Not an uncommon thing for couples to argue about. And they were having that fight again. And in the midst of that argument, the wife looks at her husband and she says to him about physical intimacy, she says, I wish this had never been part of our relationship. Just words, right? Absolutely devastated that guy. She might as well have taken a sword and just run him through with it. Decades, literally decades after that conversation still haunts that husband. What we say, our words have the ability to be so powerful for good or for bad. And so wise people, they slow down before they speak. In fact, I encourage couples in their marriage to have a list of things that they agree upon with each other. We're not going to say these things, or we're not going to speak to each other in these ways. This kind of stuff, it's just out of bounds. I encourage every couple to do that. And if you're sitting there going, okay, well, like what kind of things should be on that list? Let me give you some examples. Right? Number one, no calling each other names. All right? Unless you're talking about genuine pet names like, like Snuggle Bear or Sugar Pants or Snooky Poo, all right? And I know I called some of those out. I know some of you use those, and I appreciate you sharing those with me, and I won't identify you right here, all right? You okay there, Phil? All right, you just outed yourself, brother. All right. So it's good, Sugar Pants. So, all right, so, but seriously, no calling each other names. That's just out of bounds. Number two, no swearing at each other. I'm going to give it to you plain. There is no room for F-bombs in a loving relationship. And some of you are out there going, you shouldn't have to say that. Maybe I shouldn't. But I've been playing this game long enough to know that I do. The minute we start cussing at each other, we're losing. No swearing at each other. Number three, no yelling at each other. If the person you're having this conversation with, if they're not getting it, rather than raise your voice, reinforce or rearrange your argument. Nothing good comes out of yelling at each other. Number four, no getting historical. And some of you are thinking, don't you mean hysterical? No, that's a good thing to stay away from as well. But none of this like, you just blew it again, just like you did this year and at our six-month anniversary. Look, leave the past in the past. Don't get historical. Number five, no using words like never and always. Leave that. You never do this. You always do that. Leave that alone. It's usually an exaggeration. It's usually emotionally charged. And rarely is it accurate. Number six, no threats of divorce. The D word should be completely out of bounds. It literally erodes the security that your marriage covenant was meant to provide you with. And then most important of all, number seven, no quoting your pastor. All right? I'm serious. Leave us preachers out of this, all right? All right? Now, you should never say, well, Pastor Mike says, no. You got yourself into this. You get yourself out of this. Quit making my name a cuss word in your house, all right? Just leave it alone, all right? So, wise people weigh it before they say it. James says, hey, be quick to listen, slow to speak. And then finally he says, be slow to become angry. Now, he tells us to be slow to become angry because, again, this is one of those things in the midst of conflict. It's so easy in our brokenness to be quick to do this. And he tells us not to do this because, again, this is one of those things in the midst of conflict. It brings so much damage to bear on a relationship when somebody lets anger control them rather than learning to control their anger in the midst of a conflict. Proverbs puts it this way. It says, a fool gives full vent to their rage. A fool gives full vent to their rage. Now, this term fool in Proverbs, not a complimentary term, right? The fool is a person who is convinced they're right, even though everybody knows they're wrong. The fool is a person, they're about as relationally sharp as a polished bag of rocks, right? The fool is a person who is forever making bad moral decisions. They have no desire to try and move forward and change it where they need to change it in their life. The fool is a person who is always giving you cause to want to choke them out. Proverbs says, it's the fool who gives full vent to their rage. It's the fool who just lets it rip, who says whatever they're thinking, who does whatever they're feeling. It's a fool who does this. It's a fool who, in the midst of conflict, lets their anger control them rather than learning to control their anger. Which, again, if you just think about it, we know this to be true. We know how destructive this can be. Just think about an important relationship you have in your life and just try and recall a time where in the midst of conflict with that other person, you let anger get the best of you. How did that go? Like, chances are maybe you won the fight. Maybe you won the argument. But how was it for the relationship? See, uncontrolled anger, it's one of those things, it'll get us what we want in the short run, but it'll cost us what we long for in the long run. My unchecked anger, it's not going to cause my spouse to respect me. It's going to cause her to fear me. My unchecked anger, it's not going to cause my kids to trust me. It's going to cause them to despise me. My unchecked anger, it isn't going to cause people to want to draw near to me. It's going to give them reason to look to get away from me. It's so important that we get a hold of this and not let it control us, because it'll just tear our relationships apart. So one last time, let me share a pointer with you on how to do this well. I would argue that the single best thing that my wife Laura and I figured out to do in our relationship when it came to dealing with anger in the midst of conflict is a timeout. Now, let me clarify. By timeout, I do not mean that Laura would say to me, "Hey, you go sit down, you're in timeout, you don't get up until I tell you to, buddy." All right. She tries to do that, but this is something different, all right? By timeout, I mean in the midst of conflict, either one of us can go, "You know what? I need to call time out." If either of us sense like, if I sense, "Hey, I'm just getting way too wound up to do this in a healthy way," or if I sense she's getting way too wound up to do this in a healthy way, or just the conversation, the mood in general is not a healthy one, either one of us can call a timeout. And by timeout, I mean, we're pushing pause on that conversation. Somebody calls a timeout, they don't have to identify it's me or it's you, all right? It's just, I need to call a timeout. If somebody calls a timeout, that topic is out of bounds. We're not going there for a period of time. If Laura calls a timeout, it's not, "I'm going to chase her down. Hey, you got to talk about this right now." Uh-uh. A timeout's been called. We're leaving that alone. When a timeout's been called, we agree. We'll still talk about other things. We'll be polite. We'll be civil. We'll deal with what other business we need to. And then whoever called the timeout is responsible within 24 to 48 hours to reinitiate that conversation and pick it back up again. Huge. Absolute game changer for us and our marriage. Now, every time I talk about this, people ask me the same two questions, so we'll just deal with them right now. First question I will typically get asked is, "Well, okay, time out. You're pushing pause on the conversation. Like, couldn't my spouse just use that as a technique to avoid dealing with what we need to talk about?" Yeah, they could. Just Laura and I decided we weren't going to do that. We decided we would act like adults and use this in a healthy way. And here's the thing. Like, if you're going, "You know what, I know this is a great way to avoid dealing with a conversation that I don't want to talk about," it's really not a very good one. Because you're going to have to pick it back up again within 24 to 48 hours. So, if you're going to be immature, if you're going to be dysfunctional, at least be smart about it, okay? Figure out a better way to not talk about what you need to talk about. The second question, though, that people will oftentimes ask me, they'll say, "Well, You're pushing pause for 24 to 48 hours. Isn't that unbiblical? Doesn't the Bible say you can't go to bed angry? Doesn't the Bible teach that if you're in conflict with another person, you guys got to stay involved in that conflict till you get it resolved? Well, actually, no. The Bible doesn't teach that. Here's what the Bible says. It says, in your anger, do not sin. So in the midst of anger, I can be angry, and it doesn't mean that I have to sin if I'm angry. It doesn't mean that anger is a sin. But at the same time, in the midst of my anger, I can go places that I'm going to wish I did not go. I could do things that I wish I did not do. I can sin in the midst of my anger. It says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. This passage isn't saying that if I'm having a fight with my wife, that we got to stay engaged in this conflict, that we got to fight this thing out, that we cannot stop, that nobody's going to bed until there's peace here. You're just gonna stick with it until you get this thing resolved. It's not saying that. It's saying that if I know I'm angry, I need to take note of that. So I don't go to a place where I don't let my anger control me and take me to a place where I'm going to sin. And that if I know that I'm angry, I need to make dealing with that anger a priority. It is not okay for me when I know I'm angry with my spouse to stuff it, to stew on it, to fester over it. No, I need to make it a priority. This isn't I'll get to it eventually. No, this is you need to get to it now. This is so destructive relationally. You need to get after this thing, and you need to begin getting after this thing before the day comes to an end. When Laura and I call a timeout, that's exactly what we're doing. We're recognizing one or both of us does not have what it takes emotionally to continue in this conversation and not do something we're going to regret. If one or both of us need to take some time to get after what's going on inside of us emotionally, because it's going to be bad for the relationship if we don't. We're not going to bed angry. We're going to bed working on calming down. Let me share something else the Bible says. This is from Psalms. The writer says, don't sin by letting anger control you. Okay, well, what should I do instead? How about this? Think about it overnight and remain silent. In other words, if I'm in the midst of a conflict and I know I'm losing control, rather than letting my anger sit in the driver's seat and take me places I'm going to regret going to, a couple of the best things I could do would be to shut up and sleep on it. Not to say anything. And take some time to think about if the emotional response I'm having is really justified in light of the perceived offense. Time out, it was huge for us. Like, I remember the days before we figured this out, we would enter into conflict and we'd be fighting this thing out, and one or both of us would get to a place where we just did not have what it took to continue on in this conversation in a healthy kind of way, and we just continue on anyway. And sure enough, one or both of us would do or say something that hurt the other person and that we later on regretted. Get into a place where we figured out how to push the pause button and calm down and come back to the conversation and do so in a healthy way, just a game changer for the two of us. So James says, in the midst of conflict, be quick to listen. Be slow to speak. Be slow to become angry. As you think about your relationships, which of those three would you personally do well to get after? You need to be quick to listen. You need to recognize, you know what? I ain't God. I don't have all the answers. I need to take the time to genuinely listen to this person that I'm upset with. Do you need to be slow to speak? Do you need to weigh it before you say it? Do you need to think about, hey, should I say it at all? When should I say it? How should I say it? Do you need to be slow to become angry? Do you need to take some steps to get control of your anger rather than letting your anger control you? Which of those three would it be for you? And what would it look like for you to do that? Let me give you one more resource and we'll finish. Early on in our marriage, Laura and I read a book called A Lasting Promise. It's all about how to do conflict and how to do conflict well in your relationships. You can pick it up on Amazon. It's on there. It's under 15 bucks. The research that we talked about at the beginning of this time, right out of that book. So good for Laura and I early on in our relationship, just trying to figure out how to do this and how to do this well. Would you stand with me?